Broadcasting live from Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Cape Fear Seniors, where those who impact seniors' lives gather to tell their stories.
Welcome to Cape Fear Seniors. I'm Tom Petcher, your host, and this week our guest is Jennifer DeLong White, who is a social worker in the New Hanover County region for Services for the Blind. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Services for the Blind is a department, if you will, of the Division of Health and Human Services that's administered out of Raleigh. Is that correct?
It is. We're a branch of state government.
Mm-hmm. Taxpayer funded, which is a great thing that you're able to kind of provide the kind of services that you do. Let's start off by discussing the population. What kind of population do you serve?
I serve mostly in the independent living program. People whose median age is 73, primarily they are afflicted with macular degeneration, glaucoma, those kinds of eye diseases that are progressive in nature and that also are more readily linked with an elderly population, seniors.
What kind of programs do you offer within the context of the department?
The social worker, and there are social workers in every county of the state, so we all do primarily the same thing. Mm-hmm. We have the same job description. Our services are consistent from county to county. Works with an independent living program primarily, as well as a medical eye care program. And so the independent living program cuts across all socioeconomic lines. And our goal in that is to identify folks who meet the criterion visually of legally blind, visually impaired, and to involve them in programs which will rehabilitate them, involve them in programs which provide socialization, support, and also low vision aids. So the social worker functions kind of as the portal to some other specialists. Mm-hmm. And those specialists include an orientation and mobility person who trains folks to ride the city bus, to utilize public transportation, to use a long cane, to access guide dog programs. We have a nurse who goes into each home and assesses the lighting in the home, as well as what level of magnification might benefit a person, and sunglasses that are attuned just to their particular eye disease or eye problem. We have a specialist who does independent living rehab, and that, I think, is the most exciting program that we offer because it's called a mini center. So it's based on the program in Raleigh, which is the Rehab Center for the Blind. And we pare it down to 40 hours of intense instruction for 15 or so participants who learn kind of visual impairment 101, how to cook, how to clean, how to go through their activities of daily living in a way that it accommodates their visual impairment and it allows them to function as self-sufficiently as possible.
So do you go into the home, I assume, you as a social worker,
yes.
And you really do it, you do an actual assessment of the need for that particular potential client?
That's exactly what I do, and that's the first step.
That's step number one, mm-hmm. And then you start to roll out to some of those specialists that you were talking about a moment ago. You mentioned that especially these days, a lot of your clients are seniors. That's a result of just aging, macular degeneration, glaucoma, and so forth.
True.
It just happens as you get older. But you mentioned that these are typically progressive diseases, which suggests to me that someone must go through phases as they kind of, as they realize the limitations they have with the visual disability. Talk about how people respond to that and how do you help them deal with that?
Okay, I think parts of it are almost like people are coping with a loss, so it's very close to the grieving process. And people are at all different levels of that depending on when they were diagnosed or began to notice that they were losing their vision. We have a couple of different support groups, and that's another thing the social worker does. Mm-hmm. And those support groups are a combination of guest speakers, educational topics, and some social and support kinds of clinical, let's talk about, how you learn to do this activity or how you felt more comfortable going out in the public and walking where there aren't sidewalks and those kinds mm-hmm. of things. So the mini centers and the support groups are really good outlets for people who really need to hook up with other people and learn from them.
Right.
I always learn more at those two activities than I ever provide.
Do you find that more or less of the folks who are aging and dealing with a visual disability are living alone?
They are. And those folks are struggling so much more than folks with a seeing partner.
Right, right.
And they're much more isolated. It's difficult to get those folks to attend a socialization activity mm-hmm. or a support group. They're really controlled, some of them, by fear.
Sure. And part of what you do, I'm assuming, is kind of try to either mitigate or even eliminate that fear through getting used to the fact that you can, and this is almost a question I'm asking you, can you really live independently if you are blind?
Yes, you can.
Can. And let's talk about the specifics of that. How do you cook when you're visually impaired? What are the dangers, and what do you need to learn how to do that you wouldn't necessarily have to learn how to do as a sighted mm-hmm. person?
A lot of people who cook when they're visually impaired are afraid to use the oven.
I would.
Yeah, I'm afraid to use it now, yeah. And I'm not visually impaired. Right. But I invariably burn myself, and I think that's a fear that people have. So a lot of people have migrated to either marking their stovetop so they can feel it mm-hmm. on the buttons, the controls, or putting, like, it's been really difficult to have those ceramic tops
yes, exactly right.
That don't differentiate between the surface and the eye where you're cooking. And so people have adapted that with like a wooden frame so they can put the pot on the mm-hmm. Burner without getting burned. And so it's a combination of marking and also feeling. Most of the people that I work with are not totally blind.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some vision. In
right.
fact, people who are legally blind, 80 to 85% of them can still see some things. So it's just a combination of using what you pick up from other people and what you absorb from the folks that come into your house mm-hmm. who've gleaned experiences from other people, too, and accommodating that to your particular layout. It helps a lot if you're still living in the same house
sure,
that you've
right.
been in for a
right.
long time.
It being a progressive disease as well, I'm assuming that you have time to learn some of these steps as well. And you get as you get used to doing something a certain way when you have a little bit more sight, but then you're used to doing that. So when you are less sighted, if you will, I'm not sure if the verbiage is correct, but as your vision starts to decline, you've already learned how to do something while you could still see and feel a confidence. I'm assuming mm-hmm. that confidence must be an enormous part and parcel of this.
Absolutely. And that's true for those progressive eye diseases mm-hmm. that that evolve that way.
Right.
But there are a couple folks that I know that have had like industrial accidents, have suddenly lost their vision. Surgery gone bad, any number of those, and that's a real jolt.
That's a trauma, both mm-hmm. physically as well as psychologically, mm-hmm. psychologically, I can imagine. How do you find, where do your referrals come from? I mean, I'm assuming you stay pretty busy
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of, there are a lot of issues out there, but this works both ways. How do you find the people who need help? And how do the people who need help find you?
I think a lot of people utilize our website.
Mm-hmm.
But primarily on the local level, eye doctors promote our service.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that we're able to provide some low vision aids, particularly magnifiers, at no cost to citizens. So they help to make that available through referrals. And we get a lot of word-of-mouth referrals, you know, people at church who talk mm-hmm, to each other about,
right.
hey, where'd you get that magnifier? And it seems to really be helping you read the menu in the restaurant and blah, blah, blah. And so we also speak to a lot of community groups and try to make folks aware. And also some nursing home, health fair kinds of things, which I'm sure you know about.
Right.
A presence there helps.
Sure. How about travel? I mean, I'm getting a little bit specific here, but I mean, how do people handle traveling when they are visually impaired? There comes a point where you simply can't drive any longer, and it's a good thing when you say, I can't do that, because you're a danger to yourself as well as to the larger population. But do you assist with travel?
What we do is train folks to utilize public transportation.
Okay.
We also help them with guide dogs, which honestly help mm-hmm. help them navigate. And then we're also doing a lot of iPad kind of training mm-hmm. with folks because there are more and more applications on those devices that help people go from place to place. So that's been phenomenal with our younger population.
It helps them through audio or video or both?
Through audio. Through audio.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give an example?
Well, there are certain programs that I know the VA has introduced to their folks, and they will actually talk you on a walking route. Like if you say you want to go from this site to the bakery, they'll tell you to take two blocks left and one right, and you know, it just works for folks.
Interesting, really interesting.
But travel is, it's difficult if you're by yourself.
Yes.
But it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
There are folks at the airlines, you know, that help, that are assigned to,
right.
to help you navigate. And our former director at the local office is now the state director of services for the blind. And he is a phenomenon. He can go anywhere and do anything. He's like superhero mm-hmm. for the blind. And there have been times when he would be sitting in the passenger seat in somebody's van being driven here or there, and he would tell them they'd made a wrong turn.
And he's blind.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
That's pretty amazing. I know there's no typical client, but generally speaking, how much hands-on are you involved in terms of hours or days or weeks with a typical client, if there is such a thing as a typical client? How, if I were to come to you and I realized mm-hmm. I was losing my sight and I heard about your services, what could I expect in terms of, if you will, hands-on counsel, guidance, training, instruction? You see what I'm getting?
Mm-hmm, I do. We all, the specialists at my office as well as myself, we do kind of a quick in and out. It's an assessment at the time and referrals at the time to the specialist, the O&M person who helps you get around town and learn to walk with a cane, and the nurse and the rehab specialist, the rehab counselor. We don't have really ongoing services past 2 years. And that kind of depends on the individual's level of functioning, because what happens is invariably we'll get a magnifier for you mm-hmm. tomorrow, and a year from now your vision may have declined and that magnifier is no longer working. You know, you need something stronger.
Right.
So
when you said 2 years, do you find yourself in touch with a client over a two-year period and then starts to kind of taper off? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, yes. Okay. And the tapering off can happen as early as 6 months. There are people who need very minimal
right.
kinds of assistance, and then there are people who really need a lot more and actively and willingly participate in some of our activities and, you know, see this as an outlet to get out there and meet other folks.
And the tapering off really signals in some ways success, in that
it,
you know,
does
basically the services are no longer needed the way they were a year ago, 18 months ago, that kind of a thing. So I would say that's probably a cause for celebration. It means that the client has learned to deal with the disability successfully, has managed to negotiate whatever issues is facing him or her. It means that the confidence has increased on the part of the client, I assume, and that the skill level of dealing with ADLs, activities of daily living, has increased as well as they've kind of accommodated the particular disability. Fair?
I couldn't have said that any better.
Ah, good to know. Talk about some of the support groups that you have.
Well, this varies too. Primarily, I have a visually impaired support group. And it meets at the senior center once a month. And I have a macular degeneration support group, which also meets once a month. They're at two really separate levels of functioning. The vast majority of the visually impaired people are very, very visually impaired.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been together for a long time. That group has been in existence, I think, for 15, 20 years.
Wow.
And they really do rely on each other socially. There are lots of phone calls back and forth during the week, and they're a pretty tight group. The macular degeneration group is probably a lot more technologically savvy. They're the ones that are more interested in the iPads,
right.
and most of them are not single. Most of them have partners that are seeing, and that's made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. A lot of the macular degeneration people are still driving.
Wow.
And that's a huge difference. There's nobody in the visually impaired group that drives. But the macular degeneration people, almost all of them have certain hours they drive, mm-hmm. And very familiar routes, perhaps. But most of them are still driving.
That's brand new to me. I couldn't imagine that somebody with macular degeneration would be able to do that. Look, do you work with family members?
Yes.
As well?
Yes.
Can you speak to that a little mm-hmm. bit? I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, they're the primary support, whether they're in the home or out of the home. It might be a son or a daughter who live in town, or even a son or a daughter who comes to town, you know, maybe once every couple of few months, holidays and so forth. What kind of work do you do with family members, whether they're immediate family and present or not present, and how do you help them deal with mm-hmm. what's going on with their loved one?
First of all, they're always welcome to attend support groups and participate in that manner. Secondly, a lot of our referrals come from sons, daughters, mm-hmm. absent parents who want to make sure that their loved one gets services as planned, as they would like to. And then at our mini centers for the grand finale, the last session, family members come in and talk a little bit about how their lives have changed and the participant in the mini center, how they have grown and changed and learned as a result of participation. So it's been really inclusive, and family members are pretty involved.
Do you have particular services that are offered to low-income population?
Our medical eye care program is another program that the social worker for the blind has typically overseen, and it provides, when it's fully funded, mm-hmm. eyeglasses and exams for folks who have no other insurance and who are of limited income. For example, the guideline for a family of one is $958. There are people on disability who make more than that.
Right.
So it's a pretty strict guideline.
That's low.
It is. And the other thing that program provides is more long-term or crisis kinds of services. For example, if somebody has a detached retina and needs surgery right away and doesn't have insurance or the wherewithal to take care of that situation, the medical eye care plugs into that. So right now, medical eye care is not providing eyeglasses and exams. We're unable to do that financially, but we are taking care of the bigger picture items, cataract surgeries, treatments, laser treatments in certain cases, glaucoma medications mm-hmm. for certain participants. So,
were you at one time able to take care of the need for eyeglasses, eye exams, and so forth?
Absolutely.
With your under your budget?
Yes. I've been there 5 years, and every year we run out of money for exams and glasses, mm-hmm. but the operations and the crisis situations are usually taken care of. And so the Cape Fear Lions Club has stepped forward and has helped my program, the medical eye care program, provide eyeglasses and exams to people of limited income.
Right.
And they are not as locked into this stringent income guideline as the state would be. And there are certain situations that are extenuating, and the Lions can deal with that more effectively than the state.
And Lions Clubs historically have been involved with visual impairment issues. Is that correct?
Yes. So they have the White Cane Program,
which they
collect money for a couple of times a year. And they've changed the name of that to Brighter Visions, mm-hmm. I think, which is more contemporary.
Right.
And they have always had a commitment to the visually impaired. And one of the things they do, and I hope we'll talk a little more about this later, but is they run a camp mm-hmm. for senior citizens, mostly. The average age of our camper is 65 years old.
Is this a day camp or sleepover?
It's sleepover.
Is that right? Talk about that a little bit. Where is it?
It's in Sherrill's Ford, North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
And it's supported entirely by the Lions Club. And visually impaired people from all over the state come by bus or private vehicle and spend a week there. And the Lions support, and this is not true for every county, but in our county, the Lions pay everything but $25 of the weekly cost. So you're there for a week, and there's unlimited access to fishing and boating and tubing and sitting quietly on the porch and hiking and putt-putt and bowling.
Who knew? This is all brand new to me.
And it's so funny when people attend for the first time and their son or daughter brings them to catch the bus. They're like, I'm sending mom to camp.
It's such
a role reversal.
That's great. Is it like typical camp, like what the kids go to, kind of a little bit rustic?
But the food is good.
Sleep in dorms, that kind of thing?
No, it's more like a hotel room. There aren't televisions in every room,
right.
But it's more like, I think that's a good analogy. It's more like a hotel room than it is.
How many people are served with this program?
Hundreds. But from our area, we usually send 15 to 20.
Right. That story is begging to be done by a local news station or in the Star News. I want to start talking about that just in my own personal life because people like me, I'm assuming are just like me, have no idea such a thing exists. And it's such a great story, human interest and otherwise. And there are social activities there. What others? You have social activities throughout the year outside of camp, outside of the Lions camp as well. What do they consist of?
Well, we have a bowling league, a blind bowling league, and it is supported through the Special Olympics program here. Mm-hmm. They provide the transportation. We would do so much more if transportation were not a horrible problem, but it is.
Yeah.
It's costly if you take on the expense personally.
Right.
And it's difficult to find volunteers to provide that service. You know, people are nervous about the liability issues
Sure.
and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So there's a bowling league, and the group goes off to restaurants and visit wineries and listen to music and those kinds of things together. And
so field trips, really.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. That's great.
Again, it's like being, you know, in elementary school again.
Yeah, right.
That and camp.
Right. Just got a few minutes left. Talk a little bit about where the program is headed in the future. What do you see? I mean, obviously, it's dependent upon state funding, and that's always a kind of a risky place to be in, especially these days. Is there opportunity for expansion of services? Do you feel like you're catching all the need that's out there? Are people falling through the cracks? And what would be required to kind of make that not happen anymore?
I think we've made some pretty good strident efforts to locate people who are mm-hmm. eligible for our services. I don't see that as a big need. And as long as we continue doing what we're doing,
sure.
you know, which is speaking as regularly as we can about what we have to offer and making sure that people are educated about our services. I think that there are, because we're an aging population,
mm-hmm.
there are needs that we have that are linked primarily to aging, and that's not going to go away. Like the Blind Register has had thousands of people on it in New Hanover County in the past.
Thanks for bringing that up. I just want to touch on that a little bit. What is the Blind Register?
That is a mechanism by which we report folks who have have been diagnosed with legal blindness mm-hmm. or total blindness, and they're on a register of folks who probably shouldn't be driving.
Right.
That's just one aspect. But
sure.
It's a way to, I guess, statistically capture information that folks at the state level need. But, you know, if you get on that register for the blind, there's certainly a chance that you might be reported to the DMV mm-hmm. as somebody who shouldn't be driving. Now, most of the people I deal with, that's not a problem. They've already surrendered their license. They know they're a danger to themselves and others, and it's not a big problem.
Gotcha.
Okay, so we were talking about the future
right.
too.
Mm-hmm.
So there aren't as many blind, visually impaired people as there used to be, and it does seem to be linked to the aging process. So I think we'll probably change our focus a little bit that way. I would like to see us continue with some sort of prevention or identification as we do through the eye exams.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we're preventing future problems if we diagnose them early. It's just like all the Head Start
sure,
programs
absolutely,
and
right.
things that involved early intervention,
and
early identification right. of problems. So I'd like to see somebody kind of continue with the effort to give that a priority at the state level. I'm not really too sure what else might be in the
gotcha.
Future.
We've been talking to Jennifer DeLong, who's a social worker with Services for the Blind, an extraordinary platform of services offered to a really, really important element of our population. Let's wind up by, how do people get in touch with the program? How can they find you?
Well, on the web, mm-hmm. certainly. And it's under Division of Services for the Blind, North Carolina Division of Services for the Blind.
Right.
Our telephone number is 910-251-5743 in New Hanover County. There's also a state number that's accessible on the web. The other thing I want to just mention real quickly is we do oversee a Talking Books program, and that has really helped people feel less isolated. It's run by the Library of Congress. Every state has one, and people sign up to receive two or three books a week, mm-hmm. and the player, it's all free of charge, postage is free, so it's all done via USPS, and it's made a big, big difference in terms of people who love to read and are no longer able to read. And it kind of cuts through some of the loneliness, and the entertainment factor is important too. I mean, if you can't see television and you've been an avid reader, it's the way to go.
Jennifer, let's get going on that story on the camp for visually impaired folks. Thanks for joining us today on Cape Fear Seniors. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much.